sorry.
I'm from White County, Warren. If you're sitting next to you.
Well, we're about to talk about pairs of animals entering the ark.
That's perfect.
Okay. So this is our last year before Shavuos. Let's make it a good one. We got up to the last call, so to speak, in the previous year. And we're up to now Pasuk Vav. Pasuk Hey, Pasuk Vav. We see Hashem has decided, he made his final decision in the Pasuk Hey. We are told, V'yas Noach, K'chol Asher Tzivohu Hashem. Noach did everything that Hashem commanded him. Parag Zayin Pasuk Hey. Any questions about this pasuk? Vayas Noach techol asher tzivahu Hashem.
Okay,
that's one question. Good. What else? Perhaps, maybe. Perhaps it's a little ambiguous. What are we referring to? Unless you say that kechol just means everything, but everything is what? Everything about what?
Yeah, but it should be simply kol asher.
Right.
I think I said it's another question.
I'm not sure, but I was bothered by the ambiguity of it. Yeah. But let's keep those both in mind. Pasuk Vav.
The girls are bringing the animal.
Compared to the Pasuk of Chafbez.
Previous Eric?
Yes, it says, I asked no one to call it Jotibah, so.
Right, yeah.
Different kind of worry.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of that, but I would just ask the question, and I appreciate you reminding me of that, is the need for the repetition. Right. We already told he did everything.
Is there anything interesting about the truck, Rabbi?
There may be. I'm not a maven on that. Yeah, you're right. That's interesting. That is interesting. I don't know what to make of it, but...
And the
I seem to have a faint recollection of a number of different Torah from the Gra, from the Vilna Gaon, dealing to truck. That's a famous one I'm thinking of also, but I honestly have no idea.
See, the prior one, Rashi says, is Zeb Binyan Hateva.
Which prior one?
Prior by Yas Noah.
Right.
So this could be the whole animal.
Good. Okay, so let's keep going. So, Alan, I appreciate that. Let's keep that in mind. We'll get back to it. We will get back to it. Plus, I'm sorry, yes.
And just Hashem's name is different this time. This time it's Elohim.
Right. We're back to, right. We are back to it. Good. Pasuk Vav. The Noah, we take a station break to get the details, to get you, how do they say that? The radio, sometimes you have the radio, you're in the middle of listening to the radio game, the game on the radio, and all of a sudden they'll say, we'll take a
sponsor.
Or a station break to give the details. You were listening to WABC, whatever. So now we have a station break, parenthetically. But Noach ben Sheshmeyo, we just want to collect the details. Noach ben Sheshmeyo Shana, he was 600 years old at the time. It's interesting, there's a debate, which is just interesting. I don't know what to make of it. I don't want to stress it, but I just mentioned to you whether when he says 600 years old, does the year of the flood count towards his ultimate lifetime? Or do we say in a year of such catastrophe that someone doesn't count in the minyan? We talk about Noah's sum total of life. There's a machlokas in a medrash, I think it is, about whether this year counts or not. But be that as it may. But Yas Noah, but Noah ben Sheshmei Hashana, he was 600 years old. Hamabul Hoya Mayim Al Aris.
What's the mind?
Very good. No, well, Vahamabul is and it's just the second half of a sentence, I think. Noah was 600 years old. The, either meaning and or when. But I think the more obvious question is Mabul and Mayim. How do you translate that? It's a very awkward phrase.
We always say Mabul is Mayim, but it's not. Mabul is a total distance.
Good, very good, very good, very good. So clearly this, if Mabul would just mean water, it's almost a clumsy formulation. So we'll have to see Mefarshim play around with the words to try to make sense of just a simple pshat. Okay? Pasuk Zayin. Yavo Noach uvanav v'ishto uneshevanav Noach and his sons and his wife and their sons ito uneshevanav their wives the sons' wives daughters-in-law of Noach ito went with them elateva into the ark mitnei mehamavul. So anything to note about this pasuk?
Grandchildren.
Maybe they didn't have grandchildren.
I'm not happy with your order.
Oh, good, very good. Gene, say well. Right. It's a very firm order.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Separate seating.
Male order.
A little grammar for me.
Yes.
Better be by a vote. I don't know. I mean, it's
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
well, the answer is because I guess it's because of the first thing being Noah, maybe.
I think each one is separate. It's not a group. It's a
Vayavo. Well,
it's Vayavo is for each one. Noah, Vayavo Uvano, Vayavo Yishto, Vayavo Shevano. If it would be Vayavo et HaMishpato,
but Vano be a group. But Vano is plural, so it would be Vayavo Uvano.
Yep. I don't know. I'm not. We need the Eben Ezra. Where is he when you need him? Anyone here, Eben Ezra? Okay. Anyway, so one thing that certainly is worth noting is the order. The order is certainly not natural. If we were writing this as a novel, we would not have ordered it the way it's ordered in the pasuk. That's, I think, correct. That's certainly something that requires attention. Anything else in the pasuk that requires attention? Okay. What do you mean?
When did they come to the Teva? Did they come because of the water of the Mabul? Did they come?
So let me rephrase that into two different questions. Number one is, when did Noach enter? Simple factual question. When did he enter? Did he enter when Hashem told him to? Did he enter when it started raining? When the water started rising? When did he enter? That's number one. Number two is, Mipnei is a word which can mean different things. It can be descriptive or it could be causative. And if it is causative, what would that mean?
When he came in after it started raining, or the water was already
right, down. But whether he became, he went, so I'll just leave you with a tantalizing question. I think so. Did he go in because Hashem told him to, or did he go in because of the water?
Well, the Targum says, kodam.
Good, so hold.
Which means before.
Very good. Hold that thought again, Alan. Very good. We'll get to so. Two different things in Pasuk Ches would certainly need analysis. The order of the presentation of the Torah and Noach's ultimate and his family's ultimate entry into the Ark. When and why? Both, if you will, we're looking both as a journalist and as theologians. What is going on with that? Pasuk Tes. Excuse me. Mina behema tahora, from the kosher tahor animals. I mean, behema she'einena tahora, and the animals which are not so pure, the non-kosher ones. Umin ha'of, birds. Chol asheromei saladama, everything that creepy crawling onto the ground. Shnayim bo, they came in pairs, al Noach to Noach elateva, and into the ark. Zachar unakeva, it doesn't mean two men or two males or two females. It means one male and one female. Zachar unakeva, kasher tziva Elohim es Noach, just as Hashem had commanded Noach. And finally, vayihi l'shivas hayamim, it was after 7 days. Umei hamabul hayu al aretz, and the waters of the flood were on the land. Now, the 7 days we saw alluded to in last week, the last call, as I entitled last year, was when Hashem told Noah, 7 days until the flood. So, in 2 weeks, we have gone through 7 days. We are now 7 days later, and the flood is beginning. And the Mirz Hashem, after Shavuos, will pick up with the flood. I want to stop here for tonight. There's more than enough for us to do. So, let's start off with what a Rebbe of mine in Gemara used to refer to as pshatovnik questions. In other words, not great theological or conceptual ramifications, but let's just focus on some simple pshat things, just important to give attention to those as well. Once we pay credence to those, I think there's some major and fascinating theological and psychological, even to a certain extent, insights from the end of the shir. Yeah.
Pasuk Tes is bothersome.
Please.
Because it says Shnayim Bo'el Noach. We know it's not Shnayim Bo'el Noach because it's Shiva Bo'el Noach and Shnayim.
Right.
What does that
mean? Good. So I wasn't going to focus on it, but the Mefarshim do note it. I don't know, is Rashi one of those who note it? No, not. Rashi points out something that he said last week, that it was a minimum, even the smallest species got to. We saw that last week. But other Mefarshim point out, Gene, what you're referring to, that here also, two also means the bare minimum in the sense that two from everything, but en chanami, seven from the kosher. And furthermore, getting to a point which we discussed last week, which I didn't want to go back to, which was, we had discussed last week, there seemed to be contradictions. Did Noach go after the animals?
Right.
Or do the animals come to him? So some of Farshim split the difference and say two, okay. Noah came to him. Meanwhile, while all the animals around the world, including in Farfar, in places where it's all treif, they were coming, Noach could never have gone there. Meanwhile, he was going around getting the six. Okay, so we started off. The first shot we had on Pasuk Hey was just, what is Kechol Asher Tichol? Leave aside the cup, I don't have an explanation for that. But what does that mean, everything? What's everything? So Alan suggested that a few took him earlier when it said in last parak that he had done everything. There it was referring to building of the ark. So look at Rashi here. Vayas Noach, Pasuk Hey. Zeb be also the table. So it works, but those two Rashis are complementary. Once he built the ark, and now they went into the ark. It's interesting that the take a look at Bereishis Rabbah, take a look at the Medrash. Medrash seems to say something different. First source on your sheet. Vayas Noach Achol Sher Tzivo Hashem Ze Shiyachun Lichnos Behema Chayev Of. So he says, no, it wasn't that they were going into the ark, like Rashi says. Medrash says it was that he got all the animals the way Hashem had commanded. Now, if you take a look at Eben Ezra in the next source, Vayas Noach Kasher Tzivo, what does he say? Uba im peso karov el hateva. Who is the Eben Ezra holding like? Rashi or the Medrash?
What is karov el hateva? What does that mean?
You tell me.
Close.
If we're not playing horseshoes, which they weren't. If you're not playing grenades, which they weren't. Does close count? So, Karav Eloteva, according to Eben Ezra, did Noah enter the ark when he got this salutary?
No.
Right? Rashi says, Knisaso Eloteva. So, really, it was a trick question on my part. Eben Ezra is a hybrid or a third Shita. Now, why might the Medrash not have gone like Rashi? And why might Eben Ezra, who kind of, it almost gets the impression that Eben Ezra wanted to be like Rashi, didn't go all the way in the ark, they just came close to the ark. Why do you think?
Well, because of the next pasuk, the
very
Mehabah,
good, because in not in the next pasuk, two pasukim later. Exactly, Alan, exactly. Pasuk Zion, if a Yobo Noach Abaravito, Shevaravito, El Mahneva, if they Mehabah, that wasn't that moment, that wasn't that far away, but it wasn't then. So, according to Rashi, it's a little bit difficult. When did he go in? Because Hashem told him to go in, or because of the water. Furthermore, as we will see, Rashi of Pasuk Zayin very much stresses that Noach did not go in until the water was actually not just raining, but rising in the ground. So l'chora, it's a stira, it's a contradiction between two Rashis. So perhaps, you have to read the our Rashi in Pasuk Hey in light of Eben Ezra. Maybe it means that he approached, you know, wasn't like, you know, everyone, you know, I can just imagine if this was a modern day family, you know, the boys were in the back playing ball and the girls were in their room doing this and the little kids were on the computer playing a game and this one was doing this, you know, and then all of a sudden, okay, now I'm going to go, you know, running into the ark. No, you know, basically said, so, everyone get together, we're waiting on the front lawn, we're waiting for the word go. When they were ready to go. But when did they actually go in? As we'll see, perhaps it was a little bit later. So that's just, as I say, shot. What did he do now? What does he get such congratulations for? So the Medrash avoids all this problem and says he did a great other thing. He got all the animals together. Rashi and Eben Ezra are both talking about entering the ark, but clearly have an issue with Pasuk Zion. Another point, which I think is easily dispensed of, but again, it's worth noting, from a Pshat perspective, is the relationship between the word Mabul and the relationship between the word Mayim. What does that mean? And again, it's very clear, I think, in this pasuk that it's difficult to read. What does that mean? Mabul hayamayim. You know, it's almost redundant. So, in fact, Mefarshim do relate to that. And take a look at the Radak, the third source on your sheet. Vahamabul, he just says it a little bit differently. He adds another word. Hamabul hayamabul mayim. In other words, mabul, according to the Radak, is a word for destruction. Could have been a cyclone.
Fire.
Could have been an earthquake. Could have been a fire. So the destruction, the mabul, was a mabul of mayim. Now the truth is that I think there are some Farshim or I think maybe Rabbi Sadrigal, I'm not sure. I think there may be some Mepharshim who kind of, how shall I say, maybe fudge the reading in a certain sense. Although I don't like the way that sounded. I don't mean it in such a pejorative way. But who try to say, Bahamabul, you know, the flood of water. Which is still so imprecise. I think I'm convinced of the Radak's pshat. But again, that's just, again, worth noting. We'll put that in the category of housekeeping. Just to make sure we have the simple Pashup shot correct.
Is the word Mabul used before?
Not that I know of. I mean, in our parsha, yes. But it's so the question is how to translate it then. So do you mean, again, there's no reason to assume that the implication ever meant anything else. Really, I'm just saying in a more precise, literal sense, what does the word mean?
Well, look at Pasuk Yod-Zayin. Yod-Zayin says
Rashi apparently goes into Mabul in terms of the semantics, in terms of the root.
Where?
It's in right before the Yod-Zayin. Yeah, Yod-Zayin. So he looks at it in various aspects.
Pasuk Yud-Zayin?
Yeah, as Mabul.
You mean in the previous paragraph?
Shebola et akol.
One second, I don't know what paragraph are you in.
Yud-Zayin.
Paragraph.
Oh, it's
Vav, you meant.
Yeah, Vav.
Yes.
Yud-Zayin.
Yeah, we saw this. We saw this Rashi.
Yeah, but
what is the Lashon Mabul?
He gets it with Bilah and Bilbil.
Right, yeah. But again, the implication, you could have easily read that Rashi as descriptions of the destructive power of a flood. It's not committed
I think Rashi's focusing.
He is, exactly, which is why that Rashi does not mean you could go up, you could come away from that Rashi still thinking that Mabul means flood.
Okay, but
it's just describing what's so destructive about a flood.
Using that term.
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm discussing now something else, which is what does the word mean? That's not the reason that we use the word the shorish may come from different theories. That's Rashi there in Yud-Zayin. But once we have the shorish, what does it mean? So I think what Ebenezer is telling us is that it means some vague type of destruction, which either is plug in that Rashi and design. This or it's that.
Oskar simply calls it flood.
Yeah, that's how I always translate it too.
The average person is the only thing we used it for.
That's right. But it's kind of just. I don't want to get bogged down in this. It's just a technical point. Okay. Now the next thing we saw, which is very interesting, I think very interesting. Is what we noted in terms of the order that they seem to have entered the ark. What did the Torah say? Again, Pasuk Vav. No, Pasuk Zayin. We have Noach, Uvarav Noach, and the boys, Ishta, his wife, and Shebanav, and the girls, and the daughters-in-law. Mm-hmm. So it's an awkward phraseology. Zot Rashi, exactly. Ha'anoshim Levad. Everyone have Rashi? Noach, Uvarav. Ha'anoshim Levad. The men separately, Bahanoshim Levad, and the women separately. Why? Even though they're married. Shlafisha Nesru Batashmi Shamita. Because Taka, you'll say, what do you mean? A normal husband and wife go together, eat together, sleep together. The answer is Enechanami. If this would be a normal situation, then they would have gone together. But this was not going to be a normal married life. Because they're married, they're both surviving. Family is going to remain intact, but the whole time that year they're going to be in the ark, Asru B'Tashmi Shavita, they're not allowed to have normal, intimate marital relations. Why? Sha'olam Sharui B'Tzar. Because how could you six people, you eight, you ten people who survived? P.S. the Nitziv from last week, that said all the servants survived too, but leave that aside for a moment. How could you indulge in the pleasures of life when all these horrible things are happening? Take a look at the Medrash on the sheet. The Medrash, which is really where the Rashi is coming from, it's an elaboration. Rashi just quickly summarized it. The Medrash Tanchuma show you Asurim Mitash Mishamita. They're not allowed to live together as husband and wife. Lama, why not? Shabasha Sha'olam Nitan Vitzara. When the world is in great calamity and catastrophe, or Bechurban and destruction, Asra La'adam Lizakek Bepiria Verivya. Right? A person's not allowed to engage in sexual intimacy, marital relations. Shelo yehaya kadosh baruch hu osek b'churban ha'olam v'hu boneh. So here it's interesting. Again, I just think it's a different shade in this source. It's not just a question of self-gratification. You might have said, but Rabbi, or in this case, but Rabbi Shalilam. It's not that I want to do it just for pleasure's sake. I want to do it to repopulate the world. Yet you could say that's more elevated noble desire, and it doesn't matter, still inappropriate. If Hashem's being involved in destruction, we're not involved in binyan. V'chein asa Noach, kishenichnas, then the Medrash continues with the proof, kishenichnas b'teva, because when he went into the Ark, Siv, in our Pasuk, we have a Noach, Uvanav, etc. However, kishiyatza, what is that? Hold your finger on the place. I think it's Perches, Pasuk Tez Zion, 8:16, if I remember correctly. Do I remember correctly? Let's see. Yes, I do. Right after Revi. Say minateva. Hashem tells Noach, go out of the ark. Ata v'ishtecha. You and your wife. Uvanecha u'shevenecha. Your sons and your daughters-in-law. So there the Torah clearly changes the order to put husbands and wives together. Says the Medrash, the contrast is deliberate and revealing. Mikan ata lomeid. Lama shenasru noach uvana mitash v'shemita. And the flip side being, and once it's over, Dafka Hashem is encouraging them to to get together, and I would say normal life should resume. Normal life resumes, and rebuilding begins.
This is definitely. I mean, I would have said a much simpler shot.
Yeah.
I would have said that. I mean, because back in the beginning of the parsha, the Torah talks about the three sons, Vayelad, Nashlosh, Abanim, Eshem, Eshom, Eshel. So we have not been introduced to Noah's wife. Therefore, that's why the Pasuk has now, you know, Vayobo Noach Uvano.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
fair enough.
Pasher Pshat. I mean, this Medrash Tanchuma basically is saying that coming in other words, the separation of coming in has to do with Tashmish, which may not be for, in other words, doesn't have one.
I mean, let me rephrase what you're saying. Prohibiting them in Tashmish does not mean that this has to be like base Springtzah, whatever it's called in Williamsburg, with separate entrances.
Exactly.
Right? Separate entrances is a nachamadrega. Right? You could have separate seating at a wedding and not separate entrances. Right? That's what Alan's saying. The Pashup Shah here, this is going further. This is, Kilu, the separate entrances. Right? So, Enechanami, I think from a Pshah perspective, Alan may be right, maybe there's another explanation, but clearly there's a very important lesson, and I would want to point out, I would describe this, maybe you call it a halacha, that's fine, but I would call this an ethical lesson as well. So it's a very fundamental ethical lesson that's being taught. And the truth of the matter is that throughout the ages, our sages have taken this very seriously. Lav dafka, to implement it exactly in this way, that's something more specific, but the idea, I think they say that, was the Chafetz Chaim? Was it during World War I? He slept on the floor, I think. How could the whole world is falling apart and he's going to sleep on a bed? Or other great gedolim during World War II, when they knew what was going on with the Jews, they had certain ascetic things which they never otherwise did. Again, it's all based on this ethic, that when the world, let alone Klal Yisrael or Bitzar, so you cannot go ahead, you should not go along with your life as normal. And again, it begs the question, I struggle with this myself. The world is crazy currently. You know, every time I see a video about what's happening in Sderot, I just saw one yesterday. I was at the APAC conference, a very powerful video with a woman, a resident of Sderot, who spoke there live. You know, our hearts break. So there's all sorts of ways we help them, hopefully. But the question is, you know, should we be making changes in our own lifestyle given the reality that they're dealing with? I don't know. It's a good question. But the ethic is a very, very powerful one and a compelling one. And I'd say each in our own way, at the very least, we should consider it. We should consider it.
Krumma is very eloquent in pointing out that there is the right order. So this is done specifically.
Right. Right. I would say, you know, I don't know, Alan, what would you say, according to your pshat, is it just a coincidence that when they left the Teva, the order is different?
No, because once...
Then we already know them, and that's natural.
Once the wife was introduced, you know...
Then it's natural.
Then
it's natural.
Then when they come out, it's...
Then it's natural.
Then it's natural. Up to this point, we don't even know. We know the son, Shem Chaminyakas, they were introduced to us.
Right.
That's
okay.
Why,
fair enough.
To me, it's a question
with his wife. I know his wife prior to the son.
Where are we introduced to his wife?
This is the first introduction.
Okay, very good, very interesting. Okay, so let's continue. And really, it's the conclusion of this pasuk, which I want to spend the bulk of our remaining time on, because the conclusion of this pasuk leads to a very, very famous Rashi, which really needs some explanation on our part. Okay? So the conclusion of the pasuk was that Noach and his family entered the ark, Mipnei Mei Hamabul. So we asked the question, what does Mipnei mean? First of all, when did they eat? Did they go right away, or did they go only once it started raining? Number two is, in a more causative or psychological, why did they go? Did they go in because Hashem said go into the ark? Or did they go in because they were scared for their life? Which one was it? So Rashi, to me, that's a, if you're a very careful, somewhat creative reader of text, you might have had some version of that question. Rashi takes that, then he puts it on steroids. Rashi goes to the way extreme. Rashi says, what does it mean, Mehamabul? You have to, like, hold on to your head. If you haven't seen this Rashi before, it's good you're sitting. Ach Noach mikatne emuna or amana haya. Noach, like those of his generation, Ach Noach, even Noach, was of a little faith. Mikatne emuna. Maimin ve'eno maimin. He kind of believed, and he kind of didn't. A very, very intriguing formulation. Maimin ve'eno maimin. And therefore, Yavod Mabul, he believed and he sort of didn't believe that the water would really come. And therefore, says the Rashi, Lo Nichnas L'Teva, he didn't enter the ark, Ad Shedachakuhu Hamayim, until he had no choice, like the water pushed him. So this is a variation of the well-known Jewish joke about the flood. And the guy says, I'm going to wait for God to save me. You all know this one, right? And they send him a this and a that, and they flee, right? He's waiting. So Noach was waiting until he was one step smarter than the guy in the joke. When the water got up to his neck, shine sight. Said Noach, it's about time. Okay, now I'll get in the ark. I guess Tachath is going to be a flood. It ain't going to be a good day. Now I'll go in. Now, you're not allowed, by rules of logic and common sense, to read a Rashi like this and do anything but say, what? Noach didn't believe. So first of all, how does this go with all the plaudits? Of course. Okay, good. But still, it's like, even according to the sheet that I said, he wasn't a groisa tzaddik. But mikatne yamuna, I mean, no one said that about him. Plus, I'll ask you better. Forget whether he davened with, you know, good kavana, besser kavana. Forget how he davened and he chuckled, he didn't chuckle. No, he was a tzaddik. He was building an ark for how many years?
God.
But I'm saying, it wasn't like, you know, what is that? What was he building? Well, you remember how big that thing was? Right? Any of you have kids or grandkids? Bob the Builder, right? He was the original Bob. And he didn't have Scoop, Muck, or Dizzy to help him. Those are the talking trucks. And
maybe what it means, though, Rob, is that Shayabu Hamabul doesn't mean the flood. It means God, he didn't believe God was going to bring the destruction.
How? So what does that mean, he didn't believe? So okay,
he was hoping that God would not build the destruction.
Very good. So we'll see in a moment that there are those who want to suggest that. Very good. But the Lashon of Rashi, I don't know if you could force it into Rashi. Because the original, the introductory comment of Rashi, Nofi Katne Yemuna Haya, is very, very pejorative. Exactly. Very difficult Rashi. Now, to be somewhat fair to Rashi, he's not the first who said it. Bereishis Rabba, fifth source on your sheet, excuse me. Not exactly the same language, but I believe this is the source of Rashi. Amar Rav Yochanan, Noach, Mechusar Amanahaya. He was lacking in faith. He wasn't sure. Alulei Shehigia Hamayim. He wasn't willing to go until the water came. Ad Karsulav, right? Until the water went up to his neck, his nostrils. Lo Nichlas L'Teva, he didn't go in. So Rashi adds some sensationalist language, I would say, but the crux of Rashi is already said by Chazal. It's already in the Medrash. It's a very
the article quotes the Ma'amar the way that softens.
Oh, good. What's
there? Is he thought Hashem was his Rahman.
So I was going to say I have Gene. What does it say here? Can you read my language? Can you read my chicken scratch? You see right here. See what that says? Can you see what that says? What's underlined there?
Me'am
Lois. And I didn't even have the Star Chumash. But the Me'am Lois and others, I didn't put it on your sheet. So one approach, we'll get back to Rashi in a second, but one approach in the Pnei Mabul is, actually I think Gene, this is I think what Gene was getting at. Gene was Mechavet to the Me'am Lois. The Me'am Lois is a Yalkut, is a Likut of Agadic stories. I believe it's Italian in origin. Rabbi Ari Kaplan translated
it. It was written in...
I think it's Ladino. Ladino. Ladino, that's right. Yeah, I think it's Italian originally, right? From Italian. Anyway, so it's a, you know, it's not as authoritative as Medrash Rabbah, but it's an old book. It's an old but goodie. So the Medrash there, the Me'am Lois, says that he, Noach wasn't that he didn't believe in some theological sense, the way Rashi implies. Me'am Lois says he couldn't believe that at the end of the day, people wouldn't do tshuva. Mela, for all those years, I'm building the ark, and people ask me, hey, Noach, what are you doing? Nate, what are you doing? And he says, well, I'm doing it. Well, come on, give me a break. This guy's nuts. He had one too many beers. Come on. But then all of a sudden, it starts raining like it did today, and it didn't stop after 10 minutes like it did today, but it's raining and raining and raining, and all of a sudden, you can't drive down the street. It's flooding. You don't think? Noach kept on saying, by then, they're not going to say, it's coming. And then they'll do tshuva. Right? It'll be like, you know, in the time of Eover. I mean, of Yonah. You know, people will do tshuva until the last minute. You could do tshuva to avoid the destruction of the city. Says Me'am Lois. That's what it meant. He kept on waiting even until the water got up to his nose. Because he figured at that moment, the other people are now going to do tshuva. Now we're going to do tshuva. Okay, now we're going to do tshuva. And at some point, he just had to go in because he himself would have died. So that complete. So it agrees with the facts that he didn't go in until the water was up to his nose, but it's a completely different version of events. So I don't know how you put that together with the Medrash or Rashi, but as an alternative, it's certainly a good shot. Furthermore, to give a little shot anchor to the Me'am Lois, and you tell me if this is in the Art Scroll. The Radak. Take a look at your sheet. The Radak says something completely different than Rashi. What is Mipnei Me'amabul? Nichnas Kodem Sheyavo. It doesn't mean because of, meaning when the water was right up to his nose. It means because it was coming in anticipation. Right? Exactly. Very good. As Alan had read before, I said, you save it for later. As the Targum says, exactly, the Radak says it happened before. And says Radak, logically, this has to be correct. And he asks, Radak has no problem, the Radak has break the places, he doesn't mind questioning a Medrash. The Radak says, the Medrash makes no sense. Why would the Medrash say such a horrible, slanderous, libelous thing against Noach? Hariyah Kosev Meyid, the Pasuk itself testifies about him. Shayit Tzadik Tamim, V'asa Kichol Asher Tzivah Hashem. How do you resolve that with this Medrash? It says Radak, it can't be. Therefore, Radak says they misread the whole Pasuk. So on one extreme, you have Radak. In the middle, you have the Me'am Lois. And on the other extreme, you have the most well known of all the Pshatim, which is Rashi and the Medrash Rabbah. And in fact, I want to spend a few minutes to share with you a few interpretations of Rashi and the Medrash Rabbah. Because, as I said, given that Rashi is Rashi, he's on the page. So Rashi is certainly the most prominent and well-known of the theories, but it's also just the most radical. So I just want to share with you two particular understandings. Again, not alternatives. Radak, I believe, and clearly, and even the Me'am Lois, I would consider alternatives to Rashi. But I want to give you now two more contemporary explanations, which are really not alternatives to Rashi, but interpretations of Rashi. The first, I'll do chronologically speaking, the even more contemporary. There's a sefer called the Berkas Peretz. It was authored by a great Talmud Chacham of the last generation, who was known as the Stipler Gaon, Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky. So he has a sefer on Chumash Berkas Peretz, and he hangs on the intriguing formulation of Rashi, Ma'amin ve'eino Ma'amin. What does that mean? A believer or not a believer? Those are l'cha'ora, mutually exclusive explanations, right? Are you a Ma'amin or ain't a Ma'amin? What are you, a believer or not? You know, an American or a Christian, you know, that's I'm a believer. Well, but you're not a believer. You know, which one are you? Rashi says, no, it was both. What does that mean? Schizophrenic? multiple personality disorder. What does that mean? Says the Stipler, this is a source, perhaps the earliest source of a very common and perhaps even essential, but certainly a common human characteristic, a characteristic of human nature, which does not necessarily mean it's a good thing, it just means it's a real thing which has to be overcome. And that is that there's a difference, says the Stipler, there's a difference between what the mind knows and what the heart really believes. Noah intellectually, did he know the flood was coming? Of course he knew. Hashem told him. He didn't read the newspaper. He didn't guess. Hashem told him. What's the proof? If he didn't believe, would he have wasted all those years building an ark? Of course he knew it. But it's one thing to build it, to give lip service to it. It's another thing in your heart, in your kishkas, to really believe it. And this is a major common phenomenon with human nature. And it applies to a lot of religious things. I don't remember, I don't think the Stipler gives us an example. To me, a classic example, I dare say perhaps of every one of us in this room, but certainly most people, Mashiach. Right? Do we believe in Mashiach? In our mind? Yes. In our hearts? Maybe. A cousin of Mashiach, if you will. To me, maybe even a better example. Techiyas HaMesim. Is it going to happen? Oh, they say it's going to happen. I know it up here. But is it really here? Now again, there's no cost to us at this point. But if we had to do something, you know, walk off a ledge because we believe in Techiyas HaMesim, would we do it? What do you mean, Mamin? Ve'eino Mamin. And what we're called on to be is a maimon and a maimon. I believe, again, not necessarily on this pasuk or this Rashi, but again, this theme, which is, for obvious reasons, you know, somewhat common in the Musar literature. I think it was Rav Salanter who said, the distance between the mind and the heart is farther than Shemayim V'aretz. And trust me, this is just as true for rabbis, so I'm not trying to separate myself, trust me. But I can tell you, as someone who has to speak or preach, rabbis see this all the time. You give a drasha, yes, rabbi. Oh, yeah, you tell them, rabbi. Oh, yes, rabbi. Oh, yeah, that's terrible. Oh. The next day, same thing. Yeah, I think so. Yes, I think.
Telling ourselves.
It should.
It's got to be here.
It should.
Otherwise, it's not showing.
Yeah, that's right. There's such a thing as sort of believing. It's not that we don't believe, but we don't believe. You hear the difference?
He wasn't Abraham.
He was conflicted. That's right. Noah, that, and that may be the heart of everything. Wasn't what Noach did or didn't do. All right, we spent so much time at the beginning of the parsha. He was a kirev person. He wasn't a kirev person. He cared about other people. He didn't care about other people. It could be that either that was or wasn't true, or even if it was true, that wasn't the issue. At the heart of the issue was the heart. And in fact, the Arma Farshim, I don't remember who, but the Arma Farshim who put these two together and basically make the following point. Noach, I think I heard this in the name of Aaron Soloveitchik. I think I heard this name of Aaron Soloveitchik. I think he translated Emunah here as make to believe. For example, in Hebrew, I think he had definitely heard this. How do we say to believe? It's l'ha'amin. That's the only form of the word. It's similar to tadavin is l'hispalel. Right? The form of the word is reflexive. Right? That's the only form in the Hebrew language. It's a very rare phenomenon. So, in tefillah, the famous explanation is given because to daven is to transform yourself. It's reflective. Davening is not just about what you're saying to God. It's his follow. It's reflective. It's what you're doing to yourself. I think Rav Hirsch makes that point. But Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said this about Amuna as well. L'ha'amin, to make believe, by which he meant to say, the definition, right,
the litmus test to know if you believe in something, could you convince somebody else? In other words, do you believe in it passionately enough? You can convince somebody else. All these years, Noach is building the Teva, and again, we know there's conflicting Makaros. Did he try to Makarov? Did he not try to Makarov? But even according to the opinions that say he was trying to Makarov, it didn't work. He was the most unsuccessful person in Kiruv ever. He wouldn't have lasted a year on Eishet Torah's payroll. He wouldn't have lasted a month on Chabad's payroll. Right? He couldn't get a single person. Said Rav Aaron, Mikatni Amunahaya. He believed, but not with, again, like the stipler, not with the same level of passion. Here, but not here. And when you don't have the passion, right, ask your daughter and son-in-law in Massachusetts. You're not going to get anything done. Not without Cholent, and not without the passion. And not without the passion. Right? If you don't, we know this ourselves. We're always attracted to people who are true believers. The more you believe, again, we're not always going to buy into it, but we're much more likely to buy into it if the person's really a true believer. Says the disciple of that what was going on here. He wasn't, there was something lacking deep down in his heart. That's the stipler. Another explanation, completely, completely different, but I think also of very profound significance. This explanation comes from Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdishev in his Sefer and Chumash, the Kedushas Levi. I've darshened about this, I think, 4 years ago, and 2 years ago I actually wrote an article based on this. It's one of my favorite pshatim. Says the Kedushas Levi, this relates to a different question, which is, we've seen until now this approach based on the Zohar that as opposed to Avram fought with Hashem over one for stinking a city, Sodom, Noach didn't fight for the whole world, and that's usually why we throw Noach under the bus. You see, he wasn't like Avram. So the Redichiver, as it was, we know his famous personality, could it be? Why didn't Noach do it? He wasn't just ready to accept it as criticism. So why didn't he do it? He says, unbelievable. Everything I'm about to tell you now is literally gold. Everything I'm telling you. All from the Kedushas Levi. I'm not adding a thing, it's just gold. Gold. He says the first basic point is, think about it for a second. God tells you he's going to do something. Now, what kind of person responds by arguing with God? Right? What would be the description of such a person?
Chutzpahdik!
What's a cousin of being chutzpahdik? Paul Gaiva! Right? It takes a significantly healthy dose of self-confidence to argue with a direct command from God. Says the Kedushas Levi, but that's healthy. And it's certainly a key ingredient to greatness. You have to believe in yourself. Avram believed that he was worthy and on the level to argue with God, so he did. You know why Noach didn't, says it's just Levi? Not like everything we learned a month ago. Not like the Zohar and others that piled on the Zohar, that he didn't care enough. He cared enough, but you know what he said? Who am I? Ich bin a pasher yid. From the Rachmanis and the mercy of God, I'm going to be saved. Oh, not just me, my kids and their wives. Oh, I'm so fortunate. I'm going to argue with God. Who am I to argue with God? Stage one. That's why he didn't. However, says the Kedushas Levi, there is a very fine line between healthy anava, healthy modesty, and unhealthy self-doubt or self-deprecation. And Noach was over the line. Noach was worthy. He just didn't believe in himself. And what happens, stage two, says the Kedushas Levi, when you start off with an unhealthy, too much anava, unhealthy self-doubt, insecurity, it becomes a snowball. So when Noach first heard of the Gezerah, he understood why he was being saved. He was grateful for it. And as a result, he accepted it for himself. He was thrilled. I assume he came home to his wife, Baruch Hashem, we're going to get saved. But I can't argue with anybody else. Who am I to argue? But eventually, over the years, over the time period of building the ark, that little rotten snowball, It grew and grew and grew. Eventually, subliminally almost, it went from who am I to argue with Hashem to who am I to be saved? Finally, by the time the water comes, you know why Noach didn't go in the water? Says Rashi, hold on to your seats here. Mikatne Amuna. He was of little faith. Says Exodus Levi, little faith in himself. He didn't believe, not in God. Of course he believed in God. He didn't believe in himself. He didn't believe that he was worthy to be saved. What started off with not thinking that he was worthy enough to argue with Hashem, which, okay, maybe you could see that being a fair... No. It snowballed. And by the time it came to enter the ark, not only did he not believe he was worthy to argue, who am I? I don't even... I'm a gurnish. Eventually he tells himself enough times, you believe it, I'm a nothing. You'll be a nothing. It's self-fulfilling prophecy. And he was almost paralyzed by self-doubt. And therefore, Mekatni Emuna, he couldn't go in. Is that Pashup Shat and Rashi? Obviously not. But it is beautiful. I told you it's gold. Each one, the stipler. They're both awesome. They're both awesome. I want to end with one final awesome thing. Now that for one page of sources. Could you imagine if there were two sides of sources? Now again, I don't have the Berkas Peretz at home, so I couldn't put the source sheet on and put it on the source sheet, and the Kushas Levi, I ran out of time. So if anyone wants a copy of it, let me know and I'll Xerox it for you. Last thing, the 7 days. 7 days. So why did we wait 7 days? We saw last week, what did Rashi say? Misu Shelach. Noach's grandfather was a big tzaddik, and therefore Hashem didn't want to bring the flood until he died. In the zchus of him, it held off the flood. So, in our context, this is discussed as well. Rashi, last week, the Targum, all say the Avelos of Misu Shelach. Take a look at the Talmud Yerushalmi, second to last source. The Talmud Yerushalmi says this pasuk is the source for Shiva. Minayin la Avil mina Torah Shiva. How do we know that the Avil has to say Shiva? So the Yerushalmi answers, Kishem. Listen to the language. Shishimer HaKadosh Baruch Hu ala Olam HaShiva. Just like Hashem guarded over, watched over, contemplated his world for 7 days. Skach Atem Shamru al Achechem Shiva. According to Talmud Yerushalmi, this has got nothing to do with Misu Shelach. Nothing to do with Misu Shelach. Hashem was sitting Shiva over the destruction of the world. Look at the line in the next Medrash, Bereishis Rabbah. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Zayin Yamim Nis'abel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Olamo. Hashem wasn't paying his last respects to Misu Shelach, letting them mourn Misu Shelach. Hashem was mourning for himself, for his loss of destroying the world. My time, how do we know this? V'yisyatzev el libo, the pasuk in last perek, ein atziva ela avelus. And now, just to add one final coup de grace, back to the Talmud Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi, end of the second line, asks the question, rhetorically, umit ablim kodem shiyomos ames. Well, don't we usually have Shiva after the death? Here Hashem is mourning beforehand, says the Gemara, Elabaser v'dam sheni odeh ma'asid lios eino misavolach yomos ames. Don't know what's going to happen. How could you possibly mourn? By definition, we're human. Aval kodesh baruch hu sheyodeh ma'asid lios shimer al olam atchila. There's so much profundity to this lesson. So on so many levels, b'kitzur. Number one, I have stressed both in this year and especially over the years, and I think it was particularly last year on Tisha B'Av, this theme in many Mamari Chazal of Imo Anochi Batzara, the idea that Hashem is in mourning with us. There's a lot of Makoros about Hashem's mourning over the Chorban. He brought it, but he was still mourning over it. Number one. Number two, I think the idea, and this is clearly a powerful example of that. Number two is the issue of anticipation. Foreknowledge, I think what it's telling us on a very human level is something very true. And that is the knowledge, the death sentence, if you will, That's where the mourning takes place. By the time Nebuch, sometimes the person already passes, it's sad. Of course it's sad. And even though you knew it was coming, it's still shocking. All those things are true. But the real pain, sometimes we don't know. Sometimes it's all sudden. That's it. And I want you to know, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara, a million times, I've never had to deal with something that close in my own personal life. But through the Rabbonis especially, I have spoken to numerous families who, even though they're not on Hashem's level, they didn't know that death was coming in the way that Hashem knew it. But the bottom line is, I've heard this so many times in one form or another. Rabbi, I've been mourning for 2 years already. I once heard somebody say, and I believe it, a loving person, that death was already a relief. I've been mourning for 2 years. My parents had very close friends years and years ago. They lived in Cincinnati. The husband was a very prominent oncologist. And his young wife got breast cancer. She fought it for a year and a half, I don't remember. But Zal Lushen, when she died, relatively shortly after, the widower called up my mother to see if he knew any woman from the date. My mother was totally shocked, and being the type of person that she is, said to him, so-and-so, isn't it a little soon? She's only in the grave 3 months. And his line to my mother was, Sarah, you don't understand. This is my geshef. We fought for a year and a half, and I never told her this. But the first minute I saw the mammogram, I knew it was over. This is what I do. I read these things. I knew we had no chance. I've been mourning her for 2 years. Powerful stuff. This is what I... So, on some level, only Hashem could know definitively. That's what the Medrash is saying. But I think it's speaking to a very true phenomenon. It's that foreknowledge which is almost more terrifying than the actual event. And when we, you know, as long as we're fighting and think we can beat it, it's a whole different attitude. When we know it's over, and it's just a matter of time, we're already in mourning. It's really, really what to consider. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful Yom Tov. I don't remember if the Yerushalmi, we don't halachically. I don't remember.